Hi, this is Mimi Sheraton, author of 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, and you are listening to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Carrie Diamond, editorial director of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food. We've got an interesting show for you today, and not just because I'm barely prepared for the show. It's because we'll be talking about two very important subjects to me, cats and saving the environment. Before I explain more, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Kerrygold. Kerrygold's pure Irish butter is made with milk from grass-fed cows. The rich, nuanced flavor makes it perfect for all your baking and cooking needs. It's a taste that says 1,000 words, including, it's the bomb. I was happy to see that my local bodega, not to keep talking about Kerrygold, but I was happy to find Kerrygold cheddar in my local bodega, so I picked it up. I've always had a major cheese thing ever since I was a kid, and I was, as a child, obsessed with grilled cheese. And maybe it's because it's such an easy thing for a kid to make when you graduate to that level of being allowed to use the stove. And today I love this melted cheese avocado toast hybrid that I pretty much lived on this week. So I felt
compelled
to talk about it. There's none here. You can only have pizza here. So I don't know. I think you never get past the food you love as a kid, but we can maybe talk about that more in a minute. First, our two guests. They are two people I've known and loved for several years now. Simon, you look surprised. You know I love you. It's Christina Ha and Simon Tung, the co-founders of Macaroon Parlor, the bakery with two locations in New York City. Christina is also the co-founder of Meow Parlor, New York City's first permanent cat cafe. The two are also the force behind Cat Camp. You heard that right. Cat Camp, New York City's very first cat-centric symposium. I'm speaking at Cat Camp, and I'm really, really excited, and a lot of people...
March
11th and 12th, tickets available. A lot of my friends are jealous that I'm speaking at Cat Camp, and the ones who haven't expressed any jealousy are just jealous and don't want to admit it.
So, secret cat people. They're everywhere.
Christina is a bona fide cat lady, Simon is a cat dude, and we are thrilled they are here today. Christina Ha and Simon Tung, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you for having us. I'm very excited to be here today because we've been listening to the program for a while. So
it's been a long time in the making because you two have been a big part of the Cherry Bomb universe. You made special macaroons.
Yes, we did.
For our very first Jubilee.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Christina was in the magazine for the opening of Meow Parlor. Because we were very excited, and you're right near our office, so that was double
excitement. A two for what?
Our old office. I purposefully would walk past every day because I just found it very relaxing to see the cats in the window. But also, I've known you two forever. Well, not forever, but
for a very long time.
For a long time now.
Yeah.
Do you remember how we first met?
It was at the Hester Street Fair, and we were just starting our company, actually. We had a 6-foot table and macaroons melting because it was not the proper weather for it. And you and Rob approached us just to chat, say hello and everything. And
I wasn't even there, actually.
You weren't there?
No, I wasn't there.
I don't think Rob was there. I think it was just you and me, Simon.
It was just us.
He's just adding people in.
Things get a little blurry after a while. So.
I remember I was in school at the time, and I came home, and he gave me your business card, and he goes, "Do you know this woman?" And I was like, "Why would I know this woman? Who is this? This is a business card." And he's like, "I think she's important. You should hold on to it."
Cherry Bomb had not been born yet. I was working at Lancome. And I had a great job. God knows why I ever left that job. But I was in Paris once a month and obsessed with macaroons. And I would go stand online at, it was like the French version of the cupcake. Mm. I would go stand online at a place called Pierre Hermé. He's the one who really kicked off the whole macaroon thing. Mm-hmm. And I would buy a bunch of them and literally eat them all. And they made me so happy. He's the guy who started the salted caramel macaroon thing and the olive oil macaroon. And
he's
so
one of the pioneers of doing the fun, crazy flavors.
So I'm at the Hester Street Fair, and I see you and macarons. And macarons really hadn't taken off at that point.
No. Mm-hmm.
And you and I start talking because you and I could talk to a rock. And drop me and Simon on a desert island, we'd find a rock or a coconut, and we'd start talking to them.
True.
And you said to me the magic words. You were like, oh, my girlfriend makes these, and she studied with Pierre Hermé. And I was like, I got to know more about this chick.
That's right. We were then boyfriend and girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And since we've
centuries
been,
ago.
Yeah, since we've been married. So,
so Christina, how did you get into baking? How'd you wind up in a Pierre Hermé class?
You know, I've been doing it sort of my whole life. My mom didn't really buy us a lot of sweets growing up, but they let us bake. My parents were just like, if you want to eat sugar and if you want to eat cookies, you have to make it yourself. So when I was a kid, they would just let me bake stuff myself, which was probably a terrible idea. I remember times being like, oh, the cookie isn't baking fast enough, so I'm just going to turn the oven on to 600 degrees and it'll be done in 2 minutes, I'm sure.
Because that's how it's supposed to work.
Yeah, and then I would like leave the oven on, and my dad would be like, you basically almost set the house on fire. And I was like, I don't know what that means, but okay. So I've been doing it my whole life, and then I never really thought that it was a career or a thing that I could do. I had the kind of parents that sort of wanted me to be a doctor or a lawyer. So I went to college, and I was like, I'm going to totally do PR, and then that was not a good fit for me. So I remember, you know, I'm working this day job and then going home at night and just baking cookies and then eating them all. And to be sitting on the floor at 4 a.m. and baking cookies and watching them in the oven and just wondering how they'll be when they come out sort of made me think, maybe that's the thing that I really should be doing. And I went back home and I asked my mom, and she had just sort of seen my brother have his quarter life crisis and was like, okay, well, I don't want you to do that. I want you to do whatever makes you happy. And if that's what makes you happy, why don't you try it? So I took some classes, signed up for school, and was like, I'll go do this for. And I remember reading blogs and just being like, oh, I really want to learn how to make macarons because everyone says it's tough. And it's probably not that tough. And it was 1,000% like devastating to make. It was expensive and it took forever. And we had like a 30-year-old oven and nothing worked. And I remember thinking, oh, well, I just need to learn from an expert. So I remember going on the internet and finding this class through Google Translate in Paris and thinking, okay, it's in 3 weeks. I'm just going to go. And so I called up the school the next day and I lied. And I straight up told them, oh, I'm a student in school right now. I'm practically a professional. So can I take this class designed for professionals? And they said, yeah, sure. And I had never been anywhere near a professional kitchen in my life. So I lied, and then I went, and I was not the worst person in the class. And that
that always helps.
That helped a lot. And so I came back and was like, I can do this. I can make the career change.
Great. And then, so you started, so how did it all progress?
Well, I did that, and then maybe 6 months later, met Simon.
Yes, we met. We met, really accelerated our relationship. I think we really hit it off right off the bat. And then I guess after meeting for like, 6 months, we started Macaron Parlor. Right?
Yeah. I mean,
it was pretty fast forward. I mean, we really, everything just was right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, you know, neither of us were looking for somebody. And I feel like when you're not looking for somebody, that's when you find that somebody.
Aww.
And that's exactly what happened with us.
Yeah, and we're not good planners. We just kind of go by how things feel. And we're like, this feels fine. And one day it was like, do you want to open a business together? And then 2 days later, we're like, okay, let's file for an LLC. And that's just how we've always worked.
I think, yeah, we're still doing things like that, I think.
So you would not come out and say this yourself, but you are an exceptionally talented pastry chef. And so I have to tell the rest of the story. So you guys open Macaron Parlor, and then we stay in touch. I hired you to do a bunch of cookies for me at Lancôme. We stay in touch. My boyfriend and I open our first restaurant called Seersucker. Mm-hmm. Then, which is sadly no longer here, then we opened our coffee shop, Smith Canteen, and we got in touch with you. And you were our very first pastry chef there.
Yeah.
And then you also worked on Seersucker, mm-hmm. and you made the most beautiful things, but you're crazy like me. You had 10 jobs at the time.
You really did.
I'm telling your whole story. You had 10 jobs at the time. You guys had Macaroon Parlor on mm-hmm. the side. You were going to culinary school. You're doing all these things, and
I was helping you out kind of everywhere. Yeah. I was doing the Macaroon Parlor. I was helping out at Smith Canteen. And I was trying to hop on as a non-paid intern, and you guys were like, no, no. If you're going to be here this long, you have to get paid. Yes. And well, I was like, okay.
Well, we loved having you around. So
he was funny.
Yes.
I think I'm fun to be around. I entertain myself.
It was a sad day when you made the smart decision to focus on your own business.
We went full time with Macaroon Parlor. Yeah. That was the reason why we left.
So tell people some of the things. It's one thing for me to say you are an exceptional pastry chef, but tell people some of the things that you create and what you consider your specialties.
That's a tough one.
I mean, you could tell Christina loves talking about herself.
She hates it.
Simon and I are just going to keep talking about her until she talks about herself.
Well, obviously, there's the macaroons, and I've been making them for close to 10 years now, and I think the thing that's still fascinating is every day I still go in wondering, is today going to be a good day? For example, today wasn't a good day in the kitchen, but I like going in, and I like that mystery when you're waiting for something to come out of the oven and you're like, did I do a good job? Did we nail it today? And it's amazing to feel that way after this amount of time. So that's still a thing that makes me super happy. Right now, I'm very much into croissants. I have been, you know, spending a lot of my late night hours on Google trying to see what everyone's doing across the world, because it's another item that's sort of a classic, but also, you know, no one's really fully nailed it, or no one has an explanation for this or that, and that's the thing that fascinates me. It's like a thing that's part of everyone's life, but no one knows what makes it better or how good it could possibly be. And I think it's interesting that in New York, our standards are very different from how it is in other places. So what's great to me here isn't necessarily what's great to other people.
So, for example, do you mean how we sort of underbake them here? And in France, they have that much darker crust.
You're right on top of that. Yep.
That's a thing that we were working on at Smith Canteen, too, because I love it when it's super dark.
There's a term for that, right?
Bien cuit.
Mm-hmm. So, that's what that means.
Yeah. So it's, I like it when it's dark because, it's got a lot of texture to it. It's got a lot of flavor. It looks burnt, but it's not burnt. It brings out the flavor of sort of the flour and the dough, and it's not just, you know, heavily butter focused. It has a lot more balance that way. And so I love that. And you don't see it that often here. And then there's other things that I love.
Well, it's not that you don't see it. Americans are afraid of it because they think they're burnt.
They think it's burnt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a tough thing to be like, no, just like try it or taste it. But there's always, when it comes to food, there's a fear of the unknown. And I feel that way too. Sometimes I look at something and I'm like, I'm not sure what that is, and I'm not going to touch it until someone else does. So,
and I'll eat anything, so she just has to send me in.
I mean, I wait and see if Simon dies first, and if he doesn't die, or if he says, like, no, we're not going to do this because that's weird, then I trust his judgment on that. So, you know, I love when things are baked like that. And I love, like, sort of the story and the technique behind it. I was sitting down with someone recently, and we had bought croissants from a whole bunch of different places. And so we were cutting it open, and he had questions about it. And I was like, okay, so this one is, like, 3 trifolds, and this one's a book and a trifold. And he's like, what does that mean? And how can you tell? It's like, when you cut it open, you can see how many layers are inside. I could tell you, like, you know, how they laminate it, how much fat's in it. I can tell you, based on the flavor, how long they let their pooler sit out for, or if they have one at all. And it's interesting that you can tell all of these things by cutting something open, smelling it and tasting it and feeling it. And that's it. I love it so much simply because it's something that's so classic that I think that a lot of people overlook it.
Will we see those? Do you have them already at Macaroon Parlor?
We do. Not so much in our East Village shop because we have later hours there. So not that many people are like, oh, I need a croissant at 9 p.m.
I think one of our number one complaints in our Upper West Side shop is that we never have enough croissants. It's like a continual kind of complaint.
Yeah.
It's like the staff will come up to us and be like, hey, you think we can make more croissants? And Christina's like, can you get me a bigger kitchen?
Right. Well, also, yeah. People don't realize how labor intensive they are. You have to leave them out to proof.
Yeah. Ours take 3 days to make.
Yeah.
So sometimes, and, you know, not everyone understands it. Even our own staff doesn't always understand it. So I'll get, you know, people who come up to me and they try very hard to be helpful. And they're like, I really want us to put out like an extra 30 for tomorrow. And I'm like, that's a great idea, except for the fact that you should have told me that 3 days ago. And they're like, why? And I was like, because I was like, I let the pooler sit out for 17 hours and then I make the dough and then I have to let the dough sit and then I have to go through the process of making it. And it takes me basically a whole day to make a whole set of them. And they're like, so I can't put out more tomorrow. I'm like, no.
Oh, yeah, it's not like Sara Lee, where you can just take it out and pop it in the microwave and then serve it to someone.
That'd be easy. Yeah. Let's 3D print it next time.
I still eat it, though. For the record, I still eat that.
So let's move on to Meow Parlor. So you two were doing Macaroon Parlor, and then somewhere along the line you decide, I am going to open New York's first permanent cat cafe.
It literally started as like kind of a joke between Christina and the partner she's involved with in it. Her name's Emily. We love Emily. And she just had a really, really cute baby named Ansel. So congrats to you, Emily.
It goes back to the fact that Simon and I don't plan things. And my youngest sister was staying with us that summer. And she's like, you guys are like the weirdest people ever. And I was like, why? And she goes, you don't plan anything. Something happens and you just accept it and you go on with it. And I was like, no, don't say that about me. That's not that nice. But
was it true?
Yeah.
Well, what happened was 2 days later, we were like, you know, we'd been watching this cat outside that was kind of just boiling to death because it was so hot.
It was one of those brutal hot summers. Yeah.
So we were like tracking this cat. So we're like, let's make sure the cat gets food. Let's make sure it gets water. So we're watching this cat for a couple of weeks. And Simon's like, I really like that cat. And one day we went home and I went up first. And then he calls me and he goes, I found him. Come down, bring the cat food, because we had bought cat food. He's like, bring the cat food. I found him. We're going to feed him. So I go down there, and it's, like, not the same
cat. It's not the same cat, but it's another cute cat that was on our block.
He found a kitten. It was, like, half the size of the cat we'd been tracking, and a totally, totally different color. We'd been tracking this black and white cat, and we find this, like, gray kitten. And so he's like, I found him. Like, that is absolutely not the same cat, but this cat was pretty friendly, so we put down the food, and he was, like, thanking us and then screaming. So then,
like a good scream, like a cute scream.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, he seems pretty nice, but I've actually never had a cat before. Didn't really know much about them. So I picked him up, put him in my shirt, and I rolled up the shirt, and then I just walked into our building, and then we were just like, so now we have a cat. And then we like hung out with him and he ate dinner with us that night. Like he like ate off our plate. He sat on our lap and we're just like, okay, so we have a cat. And then we locked him in the shower overnight because we were like, we don't know what to do with this cat.
Oh my God.
And we like gave him all these boxes, which he pooped in all of them. Mm-hmm. And then the next day we're like, so we have a cat and now we have to go take him to the vet because he's our cat now. And that's how we got a cat.
How it all started, basically. And then from there, we're talking about cats. She's talking with one of her coworkers.
Yeah.
And then there was a vacant space across the street, East Village. And they were like, hey, imagine, haha, we had a cat cafe. We could just bring food right over. And that turned into a, hey, you really want to do that?
Yeah. So for those who don't know what a cat cafe is, it's a place where you can literally go hang out with cats. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing is that most of them, if not all of them, are focused on adoption.
Yes, all of them.
So if you bond with the cat, you can apply to adopt that cat.
Yep.
And you, because you two never take the easy road for anything, decided to focus on adult cats. Some places focus on younger cats. How many cats have you gotten adopted to date?
I haven't heard this number in a while.
It's probably over 200. It's hard to tell because we work with Kittykind, and one of the things that Kittykind does is they allow this program called Foster to Adopt. So you could take the cat home for a couple of weeks and see
if it works.
If it works out, you know, especially if you have a resident cat, they don't always get along with another cat that you bring in. So it allows you to sort of test it out. We have a couple of cats that are in foster with intent right now. So the number is somewhere over 200, but I don't have a hard number.
We've definitely adopted over 200 cats.
No, that's really remarkable, you two. Congratulations.
That's nice. That's a really nice feeling.
You personally have adopted how many of those cats?
So, actually, all 200 are in our apartment right now.
Close.
All right. Technically speaking, if we want to break it all down, we had Mr. Sox, who we found on the street.
Yeah.
Then we found Pickle. Found Pickle at a pet adoption event.
He's
at
a kitty kind cat.
He's a kitty kind cat. And then number three was a foster fail. That's when you're fostering a cat. You're supposed to give it back to, you know, the agency. And we failed to do so. So we have a third cat. And then my sister-in-law, Christina's sister, lives with us. And she has two cats as well.
Oh, that's where the five
cats
are.
Exactly. I wasn't trying to play it down. We have five cats in the house.
I thought all five were yours.
No.
All right, let's jump to cat camp, because we need to sell some tickets to cat camp.
We'd love to.
So Christina calls me or emails me, whatever, and she's like, hey, I know you do Jubilee. Can we talk? Because I think I'm going to do my own conference. And so we meet, and she's like, yeah, I rented the Metropolitan Pavilion. And I'm like, what? Saying you rented the Metropolitan Pavilion is like saying you rented Madison Square Garden or something. It's not like you just put down your credit card and rent a restaurant for the night,
it was,
you know? And I was like, wow, you are crazy.
Mm-hmm. I don't plan.
Yeah, no, well, yeah, there's a big hole in my pocket right now.
But what a brilliant idea. Mm-hmm. So tell us how Cat Camp has evolved and what's going on and why we should all go.
At the time that I met you, it was an idea and a deposit down on a space. And that's how we got married, too. Simon and I, we, like, put down a deposit on the venue, and then maybe 8 months later, we're like, oh, my God, we have to plan a wedding.
Wow. There is a lot of symmetry there. That's a little scary, actually.
Deposit. And when I met with you, I was like, you know, I want to do this event. And what I've learned at Meow Parlor is there's a lot of people out there who love, love, love all animals, including cats. But there's a big gap between, you know, how you feel inside and maybe what you know. And there are also not that many experts who are actually super knowledgeable, but also great at communicating that information. Because I guess cat people are sort of notorious for not being super outgoing. Like, you know, they're a little bit more introverts.
Like Simon.
Yes. Yes, that's true.
So I've come across all these people in the past 2 years at Meow Parlor. We've had over 50,000 unique visitors. And so meeting all these people and finding people that are kind of like, I love cats, but I don't understand what it means when their ear is cut. I don't understand, like, why you spay an animal. I don't understand, you know, why I shouldn't declaw my cat. And it's not that these people have bad intentions. Their intentions are really good and their hearts are in the right place. It's just that they don't know. And they don't know where to go to or who to go to get that information. And so I thought, why don't we make it fun? Why don't we put the information all in a single place, in a single event? And so you can go there and you can have fun because you're going to shop and you're going to hang out in the photo booth and you're going to meet all these cool people. But on the other hand, if you wanted to learn, you can learn. It's there. The resources are there. You know, you can go back and say, who spoke at Cat Camp? Because that's a very reputable person who is excellent in the cat world. That's someone I can go back to. So the first person to sign up was actually Hannah Shaw, a kitten lady. And I met her a year ago, and she is absolutely fantastic and one of the nicest people out there. I've never, ever heard anyone say a mean word about her.
I follow her on Instagram, and she's awesome. Just amazing.
She's awesome.
All right, not to speed you through this, but it's March 11th and 12th in New York City at the Metropolitan Pavilion. How can people buy tickets?
They could go onto our website. It's catcampnyc.com/tickets. But also, you know, there's all the information on there, including the speakers, the schedule. You could find out more about our vendors. Another thing that Simon and I care a lot about as small business owners is supporting other small business owners. So we're really, really excited to have our own first venue where we have our own small businesses there.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yes, it's really cool. Really cool.
And can kids come?
Yep, absolutely. Children can come.
Children under a certain age even get a discounted ticket.
Yep. Children under 6 are free. 6 to 12 is a discounted ticket.
Mm-hmm. Now, cats cannot come to Cat Camp.
That's correct.
Yes. No cats at Cat Camp. Generally, in my experience at Meow Parlor has always been, cats don't really like to travel that much. There are exceptions. Like, for example, Lil Bub will be there. We will also have adoptable cats there. Right now, I'm thinking it's going to be somewhere around 60 to 70 adoptable cats from all over New York City. We're working with multiple rescue groups, and our focus is on senior and special needs cats. So we'll have a lot of cats who really can't be showcased anywhere else because of, you know, some condition that they have. And I think that's super amazing. And it's a really good platform and opportunity to educate people on what it is to take care of a cat like this. For example, I think we're going to have maybe 5 or 6 cats with FELV, which is a disease that it's like a virus that causes leukemia over time. And a lot of people are afraid about what that means, whether it'll infect them or not. And so when the rescue groups asked me, is it okay to have an FELV cat there? And I said, absolutely, but also bring literature. Make sure people know what this is, that this cat's not going to give you cancer, that the cat just needs a home and it needs someone to open up their heart to them.
All right, it's time for the speed round, you two.
Oh,
it's
going to
be a
Oh, my goodness.
Speedy
you
speed round.
You sprung this on us.
All right, coffee or tea?
Coffee. I actually drink a hot chocolate that I spike with New Orleans-style cold brew, and that's my breakfast of choice. Mm-hmm. I can't drink tea. It makes me go to the bathroom way too much.
Simon, tea?
When I'm having dim sum, it's always tea, and then when I'm when I'm at my shops, I always make myself usually a latte or a cappuccino. I just love that texture. It tastes so good. But then I kind of regret it because later on in the day when I can't
sleep. Oh, he's crazy.
Yeah, I get a little crazy.
You think he's crazy?
Because I don't drink coffee normally. So like on a normal day, I'm very hyper. So when I'm on coffee, I'm like, ah!
Thanks for not drinking coffee before the show. Sweet or salty?
Oh.
You know what? Salty.
You're salty all the way, you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Simon?
Oh, sweet. No question. No question. That's probably the real reason why I'm with Christina.
One food you would never eat.
Anything with a starfish.
Oh, gross.
I hate starfish
so much.
Is that
a food?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Anything that may have touched a starfish.
Okay.
Growing up, my mom loved durian. And my smell sense can't get past that to eat it. Because durian, it stinks. There are hotels in Hong Kong that's state. Right there in front of the hotel. Do not bring it in because it will stink up like the entire hallway, you know. And no durian for me.
Or starfish.
We'll see you. Jeez.
If for some reason you two were split up but found yourselves on desert islands, which food celebrity would you want to be stuck with?
I actually think I would love Pierre May to be there. He has some really bizarre food combinations, so I'm sure he would find like a leaf and a bark and somehow make it work. He'll like grind it up and we'll just be sitting there. And the other thing that's great is he's pretty shy, so I think we would quietly enjoy each other's company.
Simon, that's not commentary.
I have two people. Okay. I have two people. Okay. It'll be Dory Greenspan because she's like the mom to the entire food world. And you, because we would just chat all day.
We would talk all day.
All three of us.
We would have fun. We might starve to death, but we would. We would have a good time.
We would figure something out. I think we could figure something out. I got some Sara Lee mix or something. Hiding somewhere.
Figure out a way to make croissants on that desert island. Damn it. Anyway, Simon and Christina, I think the world of you two. I'm so impressed by what you've built and thrilled to be taking part in Cat Camp on March 11th and 12th.
That's right.
In New York City. Get your tickets now. Hopefully you two will come back on the show and we can talk more about what you're up to.
Yeah.
But thanks for taking the time to come by. We will be right back with Lauren Singer of Trash is for Tossers and the Simply Co. after this word from our sponsor, Kerrygold. Do you have any fun baking projects planned for this weekend? Be sure to add Kerrygold Pure Irish Butter to your grocery list. Whether you're trying your hand at 4-20 Blackbird's famous pie crust recipe, Dory Greenspan's chocolatey world peace cookies, or Hot Bread Kitchen's garlic naan with green chili, you need quality butter to make these recipes the best they can be. Kerrygold's milk comes from grass-fed cows that graze up to 300 days, making it perfect for all your sweet and savory baking needs. You'll soon know why so many bakers and pastry chefs love Kerrygold butter. Welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. Our next guest is Lauren Singer, the founder of the Trash is for Tossers website and the Simply Co., a line of environmentally friendly laundry detergent. Lauren truly believes in the importance of living your values and a zero-waste lifestyle, and she will explain what all of that means. Lauren Singer, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you for having me.
We've tried to make this happen forever.
Forever.
I'm so sorry. We tried to make it happen last season, and then I heard you on Garant. We booked you, then I heard you on Garant's Doré's show, and I was like, we've got to get Lauren on Radio Cherry Bomb.
I love them so much, yeah. But I'm happy to be here, too.
Oh, we love Garant's, too. I have so much to talk to you about, and I can say this right now. I know we're going to have you back on the show because you are filled with so much useful information for everybody who's out there who just cares deeply about the environment and who is really trying to live a more environmentally responsible lifestyle. You have to look at Lauren's website and follow what she's up to. And she is going to share some of that information with us today. So I think that's so amazing that you decided one day you just wanted to live your values. Tell us what that means.
Yeah, it kind of all started back in high school, actually, when I was taking an environmental studies class, and I read Rachel Carson's book Silent Spring, which is all about the effects of DDT on animal populations and humans and the environment. And it was really my first insight into the concept that humans could really negatively impact the environment. And then when I got to college, I actually started studying journalism at NYU, and I was failing. I hated journalism so much, which is ironic because I have a blog now. But at the same time, I was taking environmental studies as my science course and was always first in the class, sitting front and center, getting perfect grades, so excited about it, talking about it constantly. Like, it flowed out of me. And I was like, why am I studying journalism when this science is like, it makes me so happy and so excited. And so I started studying that. And then my junior year, I saw the documentary Gasland from Josh Fox, which is all about the impacts of hydrofracking on humans and the environment. Again, it was my second time really understanding that humans can really screw up the environment. And I started getting involved in activism and protesting against the oil and gas industry. I was going to DC to lobby pretty often. I was holding rallies, attending rallies. I was like really in it. And then my senior year of college, I was taking the last course that you have to take as an environmental studies major. And there was a girl in the class who also was an environmental studies major. And she would bring in this big plastic bag with a plastic clamshell full of food, a plastic fork and knife, a plastic drink, chips in a plastic bag, and would eat it and then throw it in the trash.
And she was taking environmental studies classes. How was she not mortified?
I mean, that was my thinking too, right? I would look at her and just be like, what are you doing? You're the worst ever. And I would just kind of stare at her. I'm sure it was really uncomfortable for her, but I went home one day after class, and I was making dinner, and I opened my fridge, and I saw that every single thing that was in there was packaged in plastic. And I started kind of, like, looking around, like, in a horror film, kind of when everything just, like, implodes and, like, comes in on you. And I realized that, like, all of my cleaning products and my beauty products were made of plastic or packaged in plastic. And the majority of my clothing was actually made out of synthetic fiber or plastic. And I was like, I've been getting so mad at this girl for using plastic, but I'm such a hypocrite because I'm using it everywhere as well. And on top of that, I've been protesting against the oil and gas industry for 2 years, and one of their biggest products is plastic, and I'm using it and supporting them multiple times per day every day. Like, this has to stop. So I decided to stop using plastic to kind of not be such a hypocrite. And through that, I learned about the zero waste lifestyle through a blogger named Bea, who's French but lives in California. And to me, it was like the most amazing, incredible, empowering thing that I've ever learned, because I thought that, like, not making plastic trash would be, like, the way that I could be good to the environment, but realizing that I didn't have to make any trash at all was really, for me, my way to align what I really loved and cared about with how I lived my life every day.
So you became a viral internet sensation because there was a photo of a mason jar that had all your garbage for the year, and it was a small mason jar.
Yep.
I saw that and I was like, I've got to, that was inspiring. I saw it and I just thought, I need to get better. I mean, I try, but I wasn't really trying. Yeah. When I saw that you achieved that.
I had been running my blog Trashes for Tossers for like 2 years at that point. And the reason that that story got out, like, I never really talked about it that much. I blogged about it to make it easy for people to learn what I was doing, and just people in my own life. I never anticipated, like, it becoming a thing outside of my little life. But then I started my company, Simply Co., and I wrote one article called "I Haven't Made Any Trash in 2 Years. This Is What My Life Is Like." And then that just, like, developed its own life and personality and, like, went places that I'd never even anticipated. And that was kind of the beginning of everything for me.
So everybody just needs to think about that for a second. Take a mason jar and imagine your entire trash output for the year fitting into that mason jar. So I've got a long way to go before I get to that. Let's talk about the plastics thing, because my brother is a big anti-plastics crusader. Mm-hmm. He's awesome. With Surf Riders.
Cool.
And he's definitely opened my eyes to how much plastic is in my life. And it's the single-use plastic that you can really change.
Mm-hmm.
So I now, when I grocery shop, really try not to buy things that are packaged in plastic, and I find it so hard. Very few things are packaged in glass.
Mm-hmm.
There's one yogurt brand that is packaged in glass.
But it happens to be, like, the best yogurt.
It's good yogurt, so. Yeah. But tell us, you know, because we don't have a lot of time, what are a few little things you can do that make a big impact?
I always say to people, there's not, like, a one-size-fits-all switch that you can make, but on my blog, I have this whole list of alternatives, and I would just suggest, like, go and look at that. See if there's something that seems easy to you, and then do it. There's no way to go zero waste in a day or a week or a month, but we can all make little changes in our everyday life that are very low cost or no cost that really have a large scale potential impact. And so easy ones are using a reusable bag instead of plastic bags. Using a reusable water bottle instead of plastic water bottles, a reusable coffee cup, stainless steel straws, using cotton napkins instead of paper towels, you know, buying in bulk. There are so many stores that offer bulk products, and the number is growing exponentially. So just little things, but really they make a big difference.
So what is in your daily kit? Like, when you leave the house, what's in your bag so that you're prepared? You know, like, let's say we have pizza here at Roberta's after the show, and they bring out a paper napkin.
So things like paper napkins, I compost. So I guess on top of not making trash, I do compost, but that doesn't go to landfill. And then I recycle, but minimally. Recycling still is really energy intensive. So I try not to do that as much and avoid it as much as I can. But so if I get a napkin at Roberta's, for instance, I'll bring it back in my bag, in my tote bag, and I'll compost it at home, which very often comes in handy because I find with this weird weather right now, I'll have to like blow my nose or like some, I like gave a used napkin to a friend whose nose was like running on the street the other day.
You are a good friend. So what else is in your bag? Do you have utensils?
Yeah, it just depends on the day. If I'm going to my office, I'll usually have my reusable coffee cup. I'll have my lunch in stainless steel containers. My office has, you know, forks and everything, so I don't really need to bring that. And then I will bring a little stainless steel container with baking soda in it, which I use in place of deodorant. So I'll have that with me if I'm like walking a lot or need a touch up or something. And I mean, that's pretty much it for day to day. But if I'm traveling, I mean, it could be a mason jar, a cotton napkin, my to-go kit of fork, spoon, knife, chopstick, straw, that kind of basic kit gets me through a lot. And I love my stainless steel containers. They're like, they're really pretty and practical.
Alice Waters gave us the best advice. I think it was on the show maybe or in the magazine, but she doesn't buy airport food.
Airport food is the grossest.
It's the worst. And you realize, you know, you all the waste, everything's packaged
except
in plastic.
Except she's in San Francisco, which has the best airport food.
That's true. Some of the terminals out there are great. But I never really realized until she said it that you can bring your own food on a plane. I think they scare you so much with security that you don't realize you can pack up a nice little lunch and you can, you know, bring your disposable, a reusable water bottle.
Yep.
Just make sure it's empty. And you can bring your own utensils, maybe not a steak knife.
Yep.
But those little things that make a huge difference.
I went to Hawaii like a month ago, and on our way there, I mean, it's like a 14-hour travel day. So I packed me and my boyfriend like salad and pasta and sandwiches and, you know, like sauteed vegetables and like fresh fruit cut up and granola and dried nuts and all this stuff. And we get to the first stop in San Francisco and I pull all this out and he's like, what? Where did this come from? And I was like, you can bring all of this. And I try really hard to document it every time I travel so people know you can bring all your own food. You save so much money and you don't have to eat junk that makes you feel disgusting because airplane food makes you feel greasy and heavy and dirty. And why would you do that if you're about to go on vacation?
So how did your laundry detergent company come about?
So when I graduated from college, I was working at the DEP, the Department of Environmental Protection, as their sustainability manager. And I was kind of working in engineering and capital infrastructure and helping to make, I think it was like $2 billion worth of capital infrastructure projects more sustainable. And it was a really good job, but it was an office job. And I'm very bad at not being creative. And I was working on projects that were like 10 years long. And I just saw my future like dissolving in front of me. And at the same time, I had my blog and people were asking me about the products that I was making because I make all of my own beauty products and my own cleaning products. And they were saying that they really liked these products, but because of, you know, life and family and jobs and whatever, that they didn't have the time to make it themselves. So they were asking for brands that were reminiscent of what I was making. And so I started looking up companies and beauty products. There really are some amazing options out there for sustainably made and packaged products. But
do you want to name a few?
I love Meow Meow Tweet. Really, Tara is like, she and I do a little trade for laundry detergent, and I use her soap butts, which are just soap ends, as my shampoo.
I love their deodorant.
Yeah, and their deodorant is amazing. And she's just like a really incredible human. So I definitely support them. But I've been meeting so many amazing local makers, and I really support anyone who lives in your area who makes organic beauty products. And if you build a relationship with them, you can probably reuse the containers, especially if they're making it just out of their home or little space. But I wasn't finding the same thing for cleaning products. I couldn't find cleaning products that were as natural as the ones that I was making myself. And I started doing more research into cleaning products, and I found that there are 85,000 industrial chemicals that are used, and most of them aren't tested for safety before being released into the market. And on top of that, in the United States, there's very little regulation on anything, except for, like, immigrants. But we are not... product manufacturers aren't required to disclose the ingredients of their products on the product packaging. So we have no idea what's in them. And I thought that was just totally weird and wrong, especially because some of these ingredients are things like formaldehyde, you know, endocrine disruptors, carcinogens. And I thought that, you know, we as consumers deserve products that aren't going to make us sick. And so I thought about my own cleaning products that I was making, and specifically laundry detergent, and realized that people deserve something that's effective and that won't make them sick. So I decided to quit my job and launch a Kickstarter campaign to start Simply Co. And it was funded in 48 hours. And then I had a company. And
good for you.
And that's kind of what I've been doing for the past 2 years.
Where can people buy your product?
You can buy it online at simplyco.com, but we have lots of stores that we sell in. And if you go on our website, we're trying to expand right now where you can buy it in bulk, which means package-free, which is my dream for the company, because I think the best kind of packaging is no packaging at all. So you can buy a jar of laundry detergent and then come back and refill it and save $4, or you can bring in your own container to completely avoid buying any new container. So that's my favorite part of the company.
So, Lauren, it's time for the speed round.
Yes.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee all day, any day, every day.
And you do have your reusable cup right there.
Yes. I made this, like, crazy... I picked coffee when I was in Hawaii. I went to a farm, an organic coffee farm, and I bought some of their coffee, and it is so strong, and I'm so strung out. It's so incredible.
I'm so jealous. I haven't had my coffee yet. Sweet or salty?
Before I started living this lifestyle, I would say sweet, because I would buy a lot of packaged food, and most packaged food is just food products, not actual food. So I would have said sweet, but now it's salty, for sure.
One food you would never eat?
Dog.
Oh, okay, I'm with you there. If you were trapped on a desert island with one food celebrity, who would it be?
So I've been thinking about this really hard since you asked me, and it was really hard for me to focus on anything else. But I've been thinking about all of the practical aspects of being trapped with someone. And there's so many people that I'd want to spend time with, but I think they'd be really bad companions. And so I think it would have to be someone who's really good at being outdoors, really good at cooking outdoors, catching food. So I'm sure people have said this a million times, but probably Francis Mallman. And I just envision us, like, sitting on the beach and he would recite me poetry while cooking, fish on the beach.
I think you're the first to pick him. So lucky him. What are you reading right now?
The Secret Life of Plants. It's amazing.
If you had a superpower, what would it be?
I was actually thinking about, I'm pretty afraid of flying, and so I wish we knew when we would die. And so I would just travel everywhere, because there's this dinner that I really want to go to in London, but I'm afraid of going because I don't want to get on an airplane. So if I knew it would be fine, I would totally go.
Okay. That's a great answer. So everybody, that's it for today's show. Like I said, Lauren, we would love to have you back anytime.
I would
we can
love that.
Talk more about some of your tips and tricks. But in the meantime, please check out it's trashisfortossers.com.
Yes.
Great. So check that out for some really wonderful practical advice from Lauren. Thank you also to Christina and Simon. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Dave Tatasciore, and much love to Carrie Gold for making this season of Radio Cherry Bomb possible. Kerrygold butter is made in Ireland with milk from grass-fed cows. It's a taste that says 1,000 words. Thank you for listening, everyone. You're the bomb.
Hi, I'm Nikisha Davis, and I'm the owner of Early Bird Foods. We make granola here in Brooklyn. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? My very best friend, Betsy Devine, who owns Salvatore Brooklyn Ricotta, because it's simply the most delicious and decadent ricotta out there. See ya!